U.S. announced it would send 31 M1 Abrams tanks overseas to help Ukraine in its fight against Russia. President Biden talked about the tanks earlier today.
When we begin, we'll begin to train the Ukrainian troops on these issues of sustainment, logistics, and maintenance as soon as possible. I'm grateful to Chancellor Scholz for providing German Leopard 2 tanks and will lead an effort to organize a European contribution of two tank battalions for Ukraine. I want to thank the Chancellor for his leadership and his steadfast commitment to our collective efforts to support Ukraine. Germany has really stepped up.
As Biden said, Germany will also send over tanks supporting Ukraine with 14 Leopard 2 tanks, and Germany will allow other nations to send their inventory of the German-made tanks to Ukraine, as Poland has already said it will do. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the U.S. sending these tanks to Ukraine, and more generally, U.S. and European support for the Ukrainian resistance to the Russian invasion? Do you have questions about the latest there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Yoshiko Herrera is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Yoshiko, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
This story turned over the last day and a half or so. When we first called you, it seemed like an open question of whether these tanks, German and American, would be going to Ukraine. What was the stumbling block? Why was this such a big open question given past military support for Ukraine?
Yeah, well, last Friday, there was a meeting of NATO and NATO partnered countries, and this was a big issue, a big contentious debate. And Germany really was the stumbling block because Germany supplies its Leopard tanks to other European countries, including Poland. Those countries wanted to send them to Ukraine, and Germany was suggesting that it wouldn't allow that. And it didn't suggest that it was going to change its mind very quickly on Friday. But the U.S. pressure seems to have been a key reason, I think, for why Germany changed its mind. And I think the decision by the United States is in part to gain cooperation from Germany.
One of the big questions with all kinds of military hardware over the last year or so has been, is this crossing a line that's going to provoke a strong reaction from Russia and from Putin targeting not just Ukraine, but something beyond that? What do you think it took to overcome that concern?
Well, I think that this has been maybe one of the guiding questions of the war is, where is the line? What does it mean to, how can we avoid a direct NATO or US-Russia confrontation? And so each of these moments where there's a decision about sending weapons has kind of addressed that. Is this going too far? And I think the Russian response by now is somewhat predictable, which is that they say whatever weaponry is going to be sent won't make a difference, it won't work, and also the Ukrainian people will pay a price. But they've been making Ukrainian people pay a price with the bombing of civilian targets and apartment buildings, etc., regardless of the weaponry that's been sent. So I think that at this point, the nuclear threat and the threat of escalation to civilians, they've already crossed that bridge, and so I don't think that's effective anymore, and that's probably changed some minds in the West about what we can do for Ukraine.
With the American Abrams tanks, it's going to be a while to get the hardware there, get people trained on them. The Leopard 2 tanks are also going to take, they're a little closer at hand, still take a while to get there. Do you see an immediate symbolic value for Ukraine with this commitment?
Oh, yes. I think symbolically it's really important because it was a test of European and NATO unity. And there was, you know, unfortunately, disagreement that was on display last week. But the resolution of this shows that the United States and Europe is united in supporting Ukraine. So I think the Abrams tanks aren't probably going to be there for 6 to 8 months at least. Is what I've seen estimates of, but still it's an important commitment to say that the U.S. is supporting Ukraine as well as other countries. I mean, Germany is a very, very key player in the alliance supporting Ukraine. And so I think the the agreement by Germany eventually, finally, is important, even though it took a while to get there.
During Biden's speech today, he commented on at least Russian express concerns that this was an offense to Russia and raised the risk of offensive action to Russia with these tanks being in place in Ukraine. Here's another listen to President Biden.
There is no offensive threat to Russia. If Russia troops return to Russia, they'll be there where they belong. This war would be over today.
Now, I think a pro-Russian argument would be that Crimea is part of Russia now, that key eastern parts of Ukraine are part of Russia. Their claim is that they're defending their territory. I don't think that's recognized by pretty much anyone in the global community. How big a threat are these to the Russian occupation of parts of Ukraine?
Well, I think the hope is that in response to an expected renewed Russian assault in the spring, that these tanks are going to allow Ukraine to defend itself and to defend its territory. I mean, as you said, nobody outside of Russia really accepts the annexations or accepts that Russia, that the territory that they're fighting on is Russia. I think it's clear to most people that Russia invaded Ukraine. They're fighting on the territory of Ukraine, and Ukraine is trying to protect and regain its own territory. So I think President Biden is correct that Putin has the ability to end this war immediately by withdrawing Russian troops back into Russia, and that none of this hardware, none of this military support poses any threat to Russia per se, but rather it's aimed at supporting Ukraine and Ukraine's existential struggle to preserve its nationhood and statehood.
Talking to Yoshiko Herrera, professor of political science at UW-Madison, looking at the latest in the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the decision now by the U.S. and Germany to supply key battle tanks to the Ukrainian military. You can join in with your reactions, your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. I have very strong this. I think this is a ball of tangled haywire. I think it's a no-win situation, and escalating military weaponry only escalates the conflict. I don't defend what Putin is doing. I think he's held in power by the oligarchs. If Putin pulls out of Ukraine, he will lose power in Russia. Ukraine is corrupt. I think that's proven by the change of administrators they had in their government recently. I firmly believe, this is my opinion, that Ukraine belongs to Russia. It has been for centuries, and I think Zelensky should surrender. I know it's not popular, but that's my opinion. We should be negotiating peace instead of escalating war.
Jeff, thanks for the call. I think many people in Ukraine would disagree with the assessment that Ukraine belongs to Russia, but that's one of the key issues at stake here, Yoshiko.
Yeah, I think that one of the problems with the idea of Ukraine surrendering in order to get peace is that we've actually seen what has happened in Russian-controlled territory. And what's happened there is not peace. We see brutality and human rights abuses, some would argue rising to the level of genocide. And so for Ukraine to withdraw its military would mean to subject the people who are living in those occupied territories to this terror of the Russian state. And I think that's a real problem with the argument that Ukraine can just give up the territory and that will lead to peace. Unfortunately, Russia is not interested in peace, even in the territories that it's occupying.
Thanks for the call, Jeff, at 800-642-1234. Jeff, also referring to another piece of news there, President Zelensky, removed or encouraged the removal from office of some local administrators accused of corruption in Ukraine. Is that something you have your eye on, Yoshiko?
Yes, that's a big story. And potentially there could be more shakeups or changes in Zelensky's cabinet. So I do want to acknowledge that corruption is something that Ukraine has struggled with in the past. It's one of the reasons for the two successful social revolutions and turnovers in government in the past that people were profoundly disappointed in their governments and fed up with the corruption. So corruption has been an issue that Zelensky has been working on. But it's kind of an interesting question to think about. What does it mean to fire somebody on the basis of corruption allegations? Does that mean that that's a signal that the country is corrupt? Or does that mean it's a signal that the government is doing something about it? So Zelensky is definitely suggesting it's the latter, that yes, there are some problems and he's addressing them. So I guess you can look at it different ways.
And when I see, Yoshiko, measures of corruption in nations around the world, Ukraine ranks pretty high in terms of corruption. Worse still, though, is Russia. And so on a global scale, we're choosing in some cases between a corrupt, very corrupt authoritarian regime in Russia or a fairly corrupt but still roughly democratic regime in Ukraine. Am I oversimplifying there?
I think that it's correct that Russia ranks worse on international indices than Ukraine in corruption. But I think the important thing is that Ukraine has changed very much since 2019, since the election of Zelensky. And those indices take a bit of time to catch up. And just when we might have expected additional surveys or rounds of research to assess the situation, just a couple of years after Zelensky's presidency, Russia has invaded. And so there isn't a lot of, it's not easy at this point to assess the level of corruption in a wartime state. So I think that there are many signs that suggest Zelensky's taking corruption seriously and trying to do something about it. But I don't think at this point it's very easy for either Russia or Ukraine to assess the level of corruption, because both countries are relatively difficult to access in terms of social science research at this point.
We're talking to Yoshiko Herrera, professor of political science at UW-Madison, about the latest in the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the U.S. and Germany announcing they'll send some key tanks to Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the U.S. involvement with the war in Ukraine? Do you want to see more support, less support, military aid, financial aid, you name it? Call in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Yoshiko Herrera, professor of political science at UW-Madison, about the war in Ukraine, the U.S. announcement of the sending of military tanks to Ukraine, Germany also joining in on that. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. With your thoughts on U.S. support for Ukraine, your questions about what's going on there, 800-642-1234 is the number. Back to your calls now. Tim is with us in Hollandale. Tim, hi.
To the caller earlier, for one, Ukraine's never been part of Russia, although Russia's tried to take it over the centuries and have done some obscenely cruel things to those people. Two, France helped us and fight for independence, and they went broke doing it. And if they had not done it, we would not be America. And the English certainly said a lot of bad things about us, so just a comment.
Tim, thanks for the call. Yoshiko, Tim, getting to some fundamental questions here. What obligations, if any, does the U.S. have to help a country in a situation like Ukraine's?
Yeah, I think that it's becoming increasingly clear that Russia didn't just invade a country. Russia is attempting to change the European security infrastructure and really the global world order. I think that that's why many people see this not just as a matter of defending Ukraine, but of standing up for really civilization and democracy and norms of democracy and norms of human rights. To let Russia behave the way it's been in terms of the atrocities, the civilian bombing, et cetera, is really to step back from a lot of values that Americans have been fighting for over the years. So I think that there's many people that see it as both an obligation to support Ukraine against an aggressive neighbor, but also to just stand up for what's right in the world. And I think that latter argument is gaining steam the worse the Russian behavior has been as the war has dragged on.
Tim, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. The question of how this all ends, Yoshiko, the idea, and we've talked about this a little already, that Ukraine would give up parts of its territory and expose the people in those territories to what would happen under Russian rule, seems to be off the table largely. What would have to happen in Russia for them to pull back this invasion?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, both sides are committed to fighting at this point. Unfortunately, on the Russian side, no matter how bad the army, its army has performed, no matter how bad the situation, they seem to have doubled down and are more committed to continuing the fight. Unfortunately, it looks like Russia is, you know, fortifying this line of conflict of more than 600 miles, and they are really digging in and planning for renewed assault in the spring. And that's one of the reasons why the additional weaponry and high-tech weaponry and the tanks in particular are important to Ukraine. But I think a number of analysts don't see a quick end to this. But it doesn't look to me like Russia is going to accept, they're not going to voluntarily withdraw or just sort of change their mind. They're going to have to be defeated militarily or pushed back militarily. And that's why the support for Ukraine at this point, the military support for Ukraine has become so important. It's possible if there was something radical in Russia, such as somehow if Putin were to die or something like that, that could bring about a change in policy. But the prospects for a coup or Putin stepping down, I think, are remote. Basically zero. I don't see any way that Putin is going to step down.
To the extent we gauge public opinion in Russia, it seems like, at least what we see here in the United States, most of the criticism of the war, the Russian war in Ukraine, isn't that it happened in the first place, but that it was mismanaged or run ineffectively. In effect, absent Putin, we might get a replacement that is even more militaristic in some ways. Is that a concern you have?
Not really. I think that Putin is basically behaving as badly as you can imagine. He's ruined Russia as a country for decades to come. He's ruined the economy. He's made it, he's isolated it internationally, and he's caused all this death and destruction in Ukraine. So I think when people worry about somebody worse than Putin, you think, what exactly would be worse? I think he's pretty far up there in terms of worst regimes, not only for Ukraine, but for Russia as well. But it's correct that a lot of the criticism is oriented towards criticism of how the war is being fought rather than criticism of the war itself. However, I think we have to always remember that Putin is illegitimate and he's not gained any supporters during this war. There were already a lot of people who were not supportive of him before the war, and those people are absolutely silenced and marginalized. So it's hard to know the true level of support within the country, because the only people really able to speak are people who are already regime supporters.
Talking to Yoshiko Herrera from UW-Madison, political scientist looking at the latest news in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Yoshiko, I think something nagging on the minds of people around the world is, if Putin feels like conventional military victory is out of reach, if his troops are getting pushed back toward Russian borders, is there a situation where he resorts to nuclear weapons, locally at a tactical level or more? What do you watch for?
Yeah, this is a concern, and I think this has been a guiding concern of NATO's action and the United States' reaction to the war to avoid nuclear confrontation and avoid a direct NATO confrontation with Russia at all costs. I think what people look for, though, because of the number of times that this has kind of come up and Russia has raised this flag, is they look for actual movement of nuclear weapons and delivery vehicles to see, has anything actually changed in Russia's nuclear stance? Are they actually getting ready for some kind of nuclear attack? And whereas there were some indications at various points in the war that maybe this was more of a possibility, I think that there's been a lot of pulling back from that nuclear rhetoric And even in this case with the tanks, they haven't directly threatened nuclear retaliation. They've said, Dmitry Peskov, the press secretary, said, well, these tanks won't work, won't be helpful, and Ukrainian people will suffer. So I think that that's an indication that they aren't actually actively focused on the nuclear response at this point. But it remains a concern because it's a regime that is not committed to any kind of humanity or human rights or norms of decency. So it remains a concern.
In just our last minute or so, Yoshiko, what are you watching for in the next couple of months?
Well, I think that it seems like we need to understand what ways the Ukrainians might be able to break through this line and make some additional progress. I'm sure that's what they're working on. On the Russian side, there's been a lot of turnover in military command. There's remains a ton of corruption. And so it's possible that despite their efforts to improve their performance, they won't be able to. So I think that people are going to be watching the performance on the Russian side and looking for options for the Ukrainian side, but also ways to make use of this additional new weaponry.
Yoshiko, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Yoshiko Herrera, political science professor at UW-Madison. She joined us to talk about the U.S. decision to send tanks to Ukraine in that country's fight against Russia.